Recordings have started.
Great. Thanks, Christine. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. And welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 29th of August, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. We have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you are only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? Great, thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will hand the meeting back over to Aubrey Doria and Jeff Newman.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Aubrey Doria. I'll be starting off the meeting, so welcome to everybody. I see a note from Caboose that my voice sounds sleepy. I apologize. I have not been asleep. It's only 11 p.m. here, so I apologize if my voice sounds sleepy. Our agenda today is basically we'll go through the SOIs, we'll go through the work track updates, through the first four, and then a quick update on what's happening with work track five. Then we'll be doing the drafting team discussion of the predictability framework, and then any other business. Does anybody have any other business at this point? Okay, I'll ask again when we get to the end of the meeting in case any has come up. We're here at the SOIs. Before I ask about anyone else's, I have a quick one myself. I had for the last over a year been doing some research for Donuts, technical and some policy. That contract has ended, so I'll be removing that from my SOI. Does anyone else have any statement of interest updates? Okay, hearing none, just like to remind everyone that if something material changes in your work that has any bearing at all on the work going on in this working group, please be sure to document it in the SOI form and mention it at least one of the meetings. With that, I'll move on to the work track updates, and I guess I'll go in numerical order again, so though someday I should go in reverse order. Work track one, who do we have from it that would like to speak to that? Let me look. Is it Sarah? Sarah, please.
Hi there. Thank you, Aubrey. This is Sarah Bakke for the record. For work track one, next week we will be continuing our discussion on the community comment response received. We'll be covering applicant support and hopefully communications as well. So if you have an interest in either of the topics, we welcome you and hope that you will be able to attend. Is everyone able to hear me?
I
heard you, yes. Nope. I was speaking, sorry, and I'd forgotten to unmute myself. So, yeah, I heard you, and I'd asked, did anybody have any questions for you? And if not, thank you. Okay, going on to work track two, we have Robin, and we have Karen, so who would like to... Oh, no, work track two. Sorry, I got my numbers mixed up and away from it too long. So who do we have from work track two? Thank you, Michael. Please go ahead.
Hello, Aubrey. Can you all hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. So for work track two, upcoming next week on Thursday, we have... Yes, Thursday the 7th, we will have a meeting at what I believe to be Blend UTC, and we will be continuing our discussion on the registrant protections. The CC2, we'll be looking, reviewing the CC2 comments that we received. And if we have time, we'll move on to closed generics as well. But this may not come into focus until the following meeting, which is also a very important announcement. We have, WorkTrack 2 will be having weekly meetings starting the beginning of September. So on the 14th, if we have not yet gotten to closed generics, we'll start closed generics on the 14th and continue from there. I believe after closed generics, it is terms and conditions. So we very much look forward to discussing these topics with everyone in our weekly meetings from now on, starting next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael, does anyone have any comments or questions for WorkTrack 2? Okay. Moving on to WorkTrack 3, and this time, yes, Karen, please, I see your hand. Please go ahead, Karen, I do not hear you.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay. It helps if you hit the mute button. Sorry about that. This is Karen Day for the record, and WorkTrack 3 will be having its next meeting in a mere 12 hours from now. We will be picking up with our CC2 questions on objections, and after we have just a few more items to touch on with regard to the independent objector, which we have been dealing with for the last few calls, and we hope to finish the rest of the objection section of our questions this week, which it will include the questions on GAC advice and dealing with GAC advice and its intersection with the objection process. So I hope to see a lot of you again in a few hours. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Karen. Are there any questions or comments on WorkTrack 2? I mean, WorkTrack 3. Sorry, I'm really messing up my numbers this evening. Are there any comments on WorkTrack 3? Okay, then we'll move on to WorkTrack 4. And Cheryl, I see your hand, so please go ahead.
Thank you, Avery. Cheryl Langdonell for the record. And due to the lateness of the hour, Rubens isn't able to speak, so I get the job for this call. At our last meeting, we discussed registry services and technical questions. We will, in fact, be continuing that conversation on our meeting, which is coming up at 1500 UTC on August the 31st. We're going to be continuing that application evaluation conversation, as I just described, and we'll start moving into our non-scored questions, which include registry services, security policy, financial questions, and measurable criteria. Obviously, as we always do, we would welcome anyone who would like to join us in WorkTrack 4 for that meeting. That's it, Avery. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Does anyone have any comments or questions on WorkTrack 4? Okay, hearing none, I'll move on to a brief comment on WorkTrack 5, which hasn't begun yet. Invitations were sent out to the 4 SOAC, CCNSO, ALAC, GAC, and the GNSO. We have had that CCNSO has responded positively and appointed one of the co-leads for that, and that'll be Annabeth Lang. And both ALAC and GNSO are working on it, and I have not yet, and I'll ask Jeff if he has any additional comment, I have not yet gotten any comment from GAC on the proposal or on the idea as such since the invitation letter went out. So we'll be reaching out to them. There was a conversation on Work Track 5 in the GNSO council meeting that was held, I guess, late last week. And there was a concern there that we maintain Work Track 5 within the framework of a PDP working group, adhering to PDP working group guidelines and such. And while Jeff and I were listening on the call, we were not empowered to speak on the call, but the chairs who had had a discussion with us assured them that we would be maintaining the PDP working group guidelines, and that, you know, would be bringing back any decisions to the full working group, as is the practice and the guideline. So with that, I believe we were trusted to continue our work on Work Track 5, hoping that we get positive responses from all of the four invited ACSOs, and we'll follow up with more reports. Cavus, I see your hand. Heather, I see yours, but I do want to bring it just to Jeff first and see if he had anything additional to add before I went to Cavus.
Thanks. This is Jeff. Just what I put in chat, that we have not heard anything yet from the GAC, but understand that they may be discussing it on a leadership call that they have this week.
Okay. Thank you. Cavus, please. Go ahead.
Yes. Good time to everybody. If you have not heard from GAC, it doesn't mean that we are silent. We are working on that. Internally, we have about to have a leader introducing to you or to the group, and we are discussing the issue, and soon you will hear from the GAC, the chair of the GAC, engage in some internal discussions with the leadership of the GAC and with the GAC member, and we are consulting other groups internally, informally, and then we come to you as soon as we have some results. We might have some concerns, but I am not authorized to provide the concerns because it has not yet fully discussed and agreed upon. But there is some concerns about the way how we have to approve the output, because the geographic names in the specificity of the governments in terms of responsibilities and so on and so forth, and we don't want to be left in terms of minority and majority, and we have to behave properly, and then you will hear from us formally. This is my personal participant's view as far as that concerns is felt. So we'll come back to you with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Cavus, for your personal report. I'm very encouraged by it and look forward to the discussions that we will have once we have all four of the co-leaders together for that, so then we can start discussing the form, the format, the modalities of that work track. So thank you very much. Heather had put a notice in saying that she could sort of amplify and follow up on the comments I made. So, Heather, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Aubrey, very much. I'm happy to answer any questions, let's say. I think you've done an excellent job, Aubrey, in summarizing the discussions that Council had, and I won't in any way, shape, or form support to speak on behalf of Council. And I suppose I don't necessarily speak on behalf of Council leadership either, but it's easier to try and represent the views of three people than 21. What I want to do, Aubrey, is merge perhaps your comment about Council leadership's support for PDP working methods and so on And my question, which I raised in the chat, which is to say that we did discuss at some length the issue of the GNSO co-leader in council leadership, and then again with Jeff and Avery. And again, in the spirit of this thing is a PDP and we want to treat it as any other PDP, while the suggestion had been raised, do we need to employ the Standing Selection Committee to select the GNSO co-leader, we said no, that was certainly not something that would be done for any other PDP, that the appointment of leaders of work tracks should happen in exactly the same way as we had in relation to other work track leader selections. So in other words, done by the PDP. And I wonder if Jeff or Avery please could speak to how are we in terms of making progress towards having that happen. And I raise that to say, you know, I know that other groups are probably looking to us for leadership, given that this is a PDP, in terms of appointing a co-leader. I think it's fantastic that the CCNSO did so quickly, so efficiently and within the deadline. So how are we in terms of, I know we've not met our own deadline, but how soon can we work on having a GNSO leader in place? Because I think that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is Avery, and then I'll defer to I'll hand it over to Jeff for further comment. But since that meeting, there have been a few conversations about possible leaders following the patterns that the GNSO uses, which, is, as I say, are just guidelines. And therefore our invitations to the SOs, ACs, to actually put someone forward. But we're quite happy to do the selection for the GNSO using the standard method of the co-chairs working it out and then making sure that it's okay with the group. You know, I don't know if we have more to add to it at that point. Jeff, did you want to add anything to what I just said?
Yeah, this is Jeff. The only thing I would say is that was the council meeting was Thursday, and since that point in time, we haven't had a chance, Avery and I and the rest of the leadership, to talk about that selection. To date, we've only had one person that was referred to us, I guess that the GNSO Council had received, of one person that was interested, but we have not generally up until now made it known that anyone from the GNSO that would like to be considered should forward their name. So I think what we'll try to do, Avery and I will try to send out something this week, seeing if there was anyone from the GNSO community that wanted to volunteer directly to us, since we have not been referred any candidates from the GNSO Council directly.
Okay, thank you. Heather, I see your hand is still up. Did you want to make a further comment?
My apologies, off the old hand.
Okay, thank you. Annabeth, please.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, good. I would like to say that even if we, CCNSO has appointed me, that doesn't mean that we also have some concern about the procedures. We think it's a very good move forward to have the WorkSec certified to discuss the geographical names. However, we know that what will come out of this WorkSec will be referred to the full GNSO PDP, and also we have a concern that even if we work for a long time, give our advice, and then in the end we will be overruled by the GNSO anyway. So that was some of the concerns that was taken to the floor in Johannesburg when we discussed whether it should be a working group, a cross-community working group, or a work track under the GNSO PDP. So just be aware that this might be a problem. This is my personal view now, but I think that we really have to be aware that the other groups or the other participants, the three other parts, will not be there as a kind of an alibi to say that the other groups, they agree, so they just go on and overrule what we really think about it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If I can comment before I go on to Kavush. Basically, I don't think there is a practice of overruling either in GNSO working groups or in the GNSO Council, but a question of referring questions, issues, and concerns back to a subgroup for responses. In terms of using this group as an alibi to basically force an issue, I don't think that that can happen. And even if there was, at the end of all open discussion, fulsome discussions, arrival at consensus or an attempt to arrive at consensus and a failure to do so, any report would have to mention not only the prevailing consensus or support idea, but any of the other minority positions that were taken. So the whole notion that this would be used as an alibi to somehow force a set of decisions on the community and say that we had community buy-in when we didn't would be counter to the guidelines for a GNSO PDP. By opening up the GNSO PDP to the whole community, it is opened up to their ideas and to the full inclusion of those communities in the building of the consensus or the failure to build it and the documentation of where we're at. So I hope that, you know, the sort of feeling that we're just using this as a smokescreen, my words, or an alibi, your words, can be set aside. We will be discussing with the four co-leaders how best to use the meeting. The one thing that is not in working group guidelines is the notion of voting. Though there is polling and such when it is strictly defined as not a vote. So that would be unlikely to be part of what could be accepted. But any other procedures, processes, recruitment, inclusions that the co-leaders come up with to make this a fair and open and equal discussion can certainly be included. I've got Kavus and then Jeff. Kavus, please.
Maybe I have missed something, but the duty or term of reference or responsibility of these co-leaders are defined somewhere or will be defined? This is point one. I just asked the clarification. I have no problem. And I raise the question, would we have more than one co-leader from GNSO, which I don't think so. Just I need a confirmation. And the third thing is just a suggestion for these co-leaders that internally they may think of having a substitute in case that they may not be available for one or other reason. And we don't want to lose track and contact with the group because of non-availability of a co-leader for those reasons. It might be happening for everybody. These are these two comments that I would like to make. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think we'll pass, especially your second comment, on to the co-leaders when we've got the group and have them include that question in their establishment of the group. Jeff, let me pass to you both the remaining question from Kavus and then, of course, to your comments, please.
Sure. This is Jeff Newman. I think the only thing I really wanted to add, and was hoping not to spend so much time on this subject on the call, is, and Jim Pendergast almost summed it up on, in his comments, you know, just the status of where we are. We're still waiting for leaders to be chosen from the ALAC, the GAC, and the GNSO. We'll get that underway, and the first item of business will be to run a draft terms of reference by them. The goal is to make everyone as comfortable as we can within the GNSO framework for the multi-stakeholder model to help provide a provide recommendations on the geographic issue, geographic names issue. There's a lot of speculation, or there can be a lot of speculation. I ask that everybody wait till we come back with a plan to go forward to get your input. So that's all I really wanted to add on this, just to and to hopefully move on to the next subject. I don't know if anyone still had any additional comments.
Yeah, thank you. This is Avery. The reason I wanted to put it up is people have had questions, and so since we're doing warp tracks, I figured we should at least touch on it. Cavus, please.
Yes, as you remember, I was one of the supporters of this WorkTrack 5 concentrations of discussion on geographic names in one area. However, we need to possibly ensure equal footing for these co-leaders. There should be no, I would say, sorry, in inverted commas, no domination from one group to the other. They should have equal footing to address this almost sensitive issue. So I would like to be also included in the record of this meeting, to have equal footing for the four representatives of or co-leaders of the four groups that we have invited. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Cavus. That will be noted in the minutes here, and I mean in the recording of the call. But yes, I would also like to say that it is Jeff and my full intention that they be peers on an equal footing. Something that, you know, is done pretty much only in the GNSO as our part of the policy, where we do have the leeway to put subgroup members from different parts of the organization on an equal footing, something we'd love to see become more popular, but we can do that within the GNSO, and Jeff and I have the full intention of doing so. So with that, I'd like to bring this discussion to a close, unless there's a remaining burning comment. I'm sure we'll talk about this again as the process goes forward. Thank you for your comments today on it. With that, I'll close the WorkTrack update section and move on to the new GTLD framework of predictability. And I'd like to pass the mic over to Jeff to start us on this discussion. Please, Jeff.
Okay. Thanks, Aubrey. This is Jeff Newman for the transcript. So for those of you that recall, we had started talking about this topic. Well, we last talked about this topic a few weeks ago at our last meeting. And in taking a step back from the discussions that happened during the meeting, there seemed to be some confusion as to what was meant and why we were drafting this predictability framework and where it came from. And, you know, so I thought we would take a couple minutes to talk a little bit about the background and then go into some specific examples and then pretty much throw out to everyone on this call to just provide input on how you think certain situations should be handled going forward if questions like this were to come up. The whole reason we're having this predictability framework is that the community recognized in the multiple reviews that have already occurred, plus in community comment two and feedback from many different groups, that there were a number of different issues that were not necessarily foreseen when the original GNSO policy came out in 2008. We've addressed, as a GNSO community, we've addressed some types of issues, with our consensus policy implementation framework, which was the result of the policy and implementation working group policy development process. So some policy changes and how those are to be made will in the future get addressed through that process. But there still may be a category of issues that may arise during the new GTLD process for which ICANN and the community may believe that there should be input on these issues by the community. And I know it sounds a little, it's very abstract, which is why I want to bring in some examples to think about, to think about how we would address these points. So in looking back at history, when we, the GNSO community, had by consensus approved the final GNSO policy in 2007, which was approved by the board in 2008, it was understood by the GNSO community that ICANN staff would take the lead on implementing the GNSO program through what was later called the application guidebook. Again, there were a number of issues that either because we just didn't anticipate them or they just arose subsequent to when the GNSO policy, there were some issues that, in fact, ICANN staff did seek community comment on, or at least parts of the community comment on. And there are other aspects in which they made unilateral decisions based on their best thinking at the time. And so what we want to do now is to come up with different frameworks on how we would resolve these issues. Obviously, the work of this policy development process working group is to address most of the known, most if not all, of the known issues that we've seen come out, policy issues that we've that have come out of the 2012 round. So hopefully, the number of issues going forward are not going to be as great. The second type of issues that we may encounter are issues that arise after we, this policy development process working group, propose the new or changed policies to the council. The council approves them and creates an implementation review team to work with GDD staff on implementing certain issues. For issues that arise at that point in time that were unforeseen, we believe that the IRT, along with GDD, and, of course, where appropriate, public comment would come in to resolve those issues. However, the question remains, what happens when there are or if there are issues that arise once the new GTLD program launches or the next application window launches? So, as an example, after the so the new GTLD program for 2012 actually launched a communications period in 2011. That communications period was started by the release of the final applicant guidebook. At least it was thought that that would be the final applicant guidebook at the time. And so it was thought that implementation work at that point in time was done. However, as we all know, many issues arose both before applications were even accepted, which was in the April-May timeframe of 2012, and even after applications were accepted, and in some cases, after some contracts were actually signed. Now, it is for this last subset of issues that we are trying to figure out what the framework would be to resolve these unknown issues. So, in other words, if we go through a set of examples, there may be certain issues that arise that really only impact applicants, things like the glitch, the technical glitch that occurred with the application processing system. That primarily impacted applicants. issues of the change of the form of the contract. That was an issue which arose even after the applications were revealed, but prior to ICANN signing any agreements to delegate new TLDs. That's another example of the types of issues that arose that we had to consider. And of course, there was the whole name collision issues, which although originally brought up in 2010, wasn't really addressed and not really brought to the community attention until 2012-2013 timeframe. So what we found in the last process was, or the last in the 2012 round, was that there was no predictable mechanism to address any of these concerns. That resulted in a whole host of delays for applicants, uncertainty for applicants as to when, if ever, their domain name applications would be evaluated, approved, and or delegated, and certainly affected a number of other aspects of the program. Now, I'm looking at the comments here, and I think we're still talking about WorkTrack 5 issues. If I could ask, although I appreciate the comments, if I could ask that we try to get everyone to turn to the current topic. It's not that I don't want comments on this, and in fact, if you want to send an email later on the topic of WorkTrack 5, that would be great, but I'd really love to see if we can move on from that just for now. So I see Caboose with his hand raised. So Caboose, I'm hoping you're going to start with this subject. So Caboose, please.
Yes, Jeff, I put something in the chat that I will add two words before predictability and the other before disability. I don't think that we could talk about the stability. Stability means the stagnation, no change at all. We don't know whether we could design something which is stable. Maybe relative stability, that is correct, and instead of a predictability, some predictability. It is difficult to predict. We are not fortune teller, but we could have some predictability. However, what we're discussing here is depending on the approach you will take, whether we take hybrid, whether we take first come, first serve, whether we take open window for some time, close it, go ahead for processing and again opening. So all of them have their own predictability and their own stability and so on, or totally open with total first come, first serve. So they are dependent on that approach as well. Well, we should just take that into account when discussing this predictability and stability. Once again, nothing is stable totally, because that in this process, that would not respond to the needs and requirements that may arise depending on the time. So we should have a sort of, I would say, trial and error corrections, corrective measures in order to respond to that need. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Caboose. I think the important point, as you bring out, is that we're never going to know. There's no way we can predict every single issue that's going to come up. But if we have some sort of framework to deal with those issues, that's at least a positive step into ensuring some form of predictability, reliability, and fairness as well for applicants and for the community. And as Jim points out, there was also, Jim Pendergast puts into chat, there were also changes to the program as a result of GAC advice. And so that could in the future happen as well with new GAC advice on new circumstances. You know, what's the appropriate mechanism to introduce those types of changes into the system? So Michael's got a question. Jeff, question for clarity. Predictability in our discussion is limited to the process itself and not necessarily the outcome. as in the delay in some TLDs to launch, use their TLD. Correct. Correct. The only thing we can work on now at this point is the predictability of the process that we use in order to address issues that arise. There's, we could talk as well about a threshold of what the issues need to reach in order to result in changes. But at this point, we're really just working on predictability in the process, as you say, the process itself. So I want everyone to kind of take their minds back to 2011. And I sent this around in an email, and this was an email in my personal capacity because there were some opinions that were in there. But I'd like to just talk about some of the issues that arose and how we would see resolving those issues if they were not previously resolved. So this is a little bit of suspension of belief here because some of these issues have actually been resolved through different mechanisms. But I'd like us to think about these issues as if it was the first time it arose, and if we could go back in time, what would have been the optimal process to address this? So the first one, and again, I'm not focusing on the document at this point. The document's up there because it's something we're working on, but I think if we have this discussion on specific examples, it may help us with wording changes for the document. So one of the first examples that I brought up was to imagine a scenario where there was some sort of operational flaw in the application system for which applicants are using to enter their information. And I can't, and so they're either it's a security breach or it's just some issue where the system just is not working as it was intended, or there's some glitch. Now, in 2012, the way this was handled was ICANN staff put up a page on their website that says, we apologize for any inconvenience this has caused. We're going to try to figure it out. Once we figure it out, we'll let you know. And, you know, it posed status updates every week. Is this the optimal process for something like this going forward? What could have been done? What should have been done? And again, I don't want to address things about the application system itself to solve that, like having a better application system, but what would be a way for ICANN to resolve these types of issues? So Maxine said there should have been an RFP initially for the system in the first place. Okay, assuming they did an RFP, assuming it was the perfect process and the perfect vendor was chosen and an issue arose with the implementation, what are your thoughts? Heather, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Heather Forrest.
Heather, I'm not hearing you. I'm not sure if...
Forgive me. I was talking to myself. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. You're good now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, great.
I had what sounded like a wonderful thing to say, and I sadly said it only for myself. So my point was how we go about appointing the party that's going to manage the thing. We need more transparency in the process in terms of that party's SLAs. I think one of the real disappointments of that glitch, aside from the glitch itself, was the fact that we had absolutely no optics into a timeline. We had no, you know, applicants were really just left waiting for an answer. And I think to the extent that we can improve that with clear, transparent SLAs, that the community has some input to, that could be rather helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Heather. I think that's a good comment. That would certainly, more transparency certainly will lead to better predictability and happiness amongst the applicants. I think as issues arose with the application system and things beyond, I think ICANN did have some more transparency. I will note that there was certainly more transparency about the security breach that happened later on than there was on the initial glitch. So I think ICANN may have hopefully learned that lesson. But let me ask the question a little bit differently. So if as a result of this flaw, ICANN were to have to change the way that the application process would have to work, is this the type of issue? So let's say instead of using a homemade system, ICANN found that it now had to take a two-month delay and bring in a third-party new software vendor to do a new application process through a different mechanism. Is this something that's purely implementation left to ICANN staff? Is this something the community does or does not care about? And it's fine to not care about it as a community. It's fine. As long as we kind of delineate, this is the type of situation we foresee being for ICANN staff to manage. This is not something that we expect the community to weigh in on. And I'm going to have different examples, some of which will be, I think, many more people might think that the community should be involved, but others may not. So I'm trying to kind of go from the whole spectrum. So we have some comments. Let's see. Going back here on the chat, we would need to know, okay, some more about transparency. We need to know the vendor's time frame for fixing it. Then there's a comment from Anne saying that the big issue here is who should determine whether an issue involves policy or not. I think the IRT should determine. I don't necessarily buy the notion that staff or some informal discussion can determine whether or not policy issues are involved. Current draft of predictability framework says staff will collaborate with community. Don't know what that means in terms of decision making. Heather says, at Jeff, one of the factors is the stress on the system. Having a round or window only open for a brief period of time with a definite closing day makes this more of an issue. Cavus agrees with Greg. I must have missed Greg's comment. Sorry. Greg's comment was probably higher up. Let me go back to Greg's. Seems like the process created by the policy implementation work group should be applied. Okay. Jim says, I wouldn't say they don't care about it. Ensuring the application process is secure and fair is critical to trust in the program. Cavu says, if an issue came up where ICANN had to change the application process, is this purely implementation? Is it something community should weigh in on? Fully agree with that. Okay, so I want to, again, take us back. So I really wanted to just kind of go over different types of scenarios. So Anne brings up the point of the IRT and the Policy and Implementation Working Group. Now, unless I'm misunderstanding, and I kind of went back and talked to some people about this, my understanding is that an IRT comes into place at the time in which issues are discovered, well, either to initially address issues that we know need to be addressed for implementing a GNSO policy, prior to the board or even after the board adopts the policy, or where issues come up later on where they certainly arise to a policy or an implementation issue based out of a GNSO policy. What I'm specifically asking about here, accepting that process and accepting all of that, is what happens if issues arise once the program is actually launched. And I do not believe that, and maybe I'm wrong, I could easily be wrong, so please disagree with me if you disagree. It was my belief in reading the outcome that not all issues that arise after the program launches would be within the scope of a GNSO implementation review team. That there could be certain issues that arise, and we'll go through again some examples, that do not have to go back to the full GNSO IRT in order to get resolution or in order to provide input to ICANN to get resolution. So going back to the chat, Heather says, looks like we have two different conversations here in the chat, one on policy versus implementation, the other one on the system. Ann says, at Heather, the policy and implementation working group determined that it is not valuable to try and decide whether or not an issue is policy or implementation. It's only important to determine how the policymaker decides to treat the topic, whether or not it involves policy. Michael says, depends on the issue. I agree with that, Michael, and hopefully one of the things we can do is develop criteria so that we can have some more predictability as to which process we would go down, depending on what the issue is. And then Heather says, I agree with Jeff, but it's not clear to me how we determine whether something goes back to the IRT or not. Greg, please.
Jeff, Greg Shatton for the record. I thought I'd let you give your voice a rest, especially as you're using some of the time to read what other people are writing. So I figured I'd just talk. It seems to me presumptively that any issue that comes up, even once the program is launched, where the implementation is not working, is an implementation issue and should go back to the IRT. The idea that some of these are not implementation problems and somehow trying to create yet another little slice of the process that's somehow beyond implementation, at the very least, I would say I find it to be kind of an extremely disfavored slice and one that should be looked at narrowly. And if the idea is to disenfranchise certain parts of the multi-stakeholder community that would be involved in an IRT, that troubles me. I don't want to add to the paranoia that's already been a feature of this call, and I hate to sound like that, but at the same time, I'm not sure what this alternate method of dealing with implementation problems that occur after the ship is in the ocean should be dealing with. I mean, clearly you want something that's more nimble, if that's the issue, if IRTs are somehow perceived as not nimble enough. But aside from that, I think, we need to make sure that, at core, we are dealing with this as part of the overall policy and implementation process, not as if there's some sort of third task that comes after implementation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. And going back and kind of thinking about it and what you said, perhaps using the word implementation for both things is causing confusion. Perhaps, and I do remember suggesting this when the implementation group had started way back when, was using a separate term like execution of the program. When I think of policy and implementation, that working group, it's really the implementation referred to there is implementing the GNSO policy. The implementation of the GNSO policy, for example, could be having a trusted third-party system that's transparent with transparency rules built into it to receive applications, right? That could be the GNSO policy and the implementation of it. And the implementation could also be having an RFP to determine that vendor, et cetera. But now that vendor has launched, that vendor has already done the work, and we find that there's an execution issue. I'll call it an execution issue. Like information that shouldn't have been disclosed is being disclosed to parties that shouldn't have gotten it. Or the application system actually doesn't allow you to fill out question 46 with free form text like it was supposed to. Okay, those are execution issues. And what we're trying to do, I think as you kind of said, was we're trying to provide a mechanism for input to ICANN staff, but more, I'll use the word you use, Greg, more nimble than going to a full IRT made up of one representative from each constituency, which may or may not be impacted by the type of issue. I think what I'm trying to see is there a category of issues that arise that may be more considered execution for which ICANN could follow a predictable process that doesn't necessitate having to go to a full implementation review team. So, putting that out there and now catching up back on the comments, Ruben says, I don't think we can avoid an IRT since this is a PDP working group. Just to address that, Ruben, I'm not trying to avoid the IRT. My assumption is that the IRT has already done its work, and that now we are talking about execution type issues. Cavusa, oh, I guess there was some background noise. Ann says, I've commented on that the IRT should be standing to be consulted whenever an issue arises. Okay. Ann, thanks. Let me read the other comments and I'll come back to that one. Or maybe you want to address it some more because I see your hand raised. So Greg says that trying to say some of these are not implementation issues is causing confusion. Just as implementation problems raise policy issues, execution problems raise implementation issues. Cavu says, I have difficulties with your new term, execution versus implementation. Greg says, maybe we need an implementation and execution working group. Okay. Ann, actually, you just lowered your hand, but I wanted to, yes, turn it over to you, please.
Thank you, Jeff. This is Ann. I'm having a few connectivity problems, so I apologize about that. But, I know I've been pretty vocal on the list about this. I think that I need to try to understand better why you think that it's possible to isolate issues which you characterize as nearly execution. And, I guess background, we all come from different backgrounds, right? And so, as a very active member of Policy and Implementation Working Group, I can tell you that what we did, of course, was we took several of these issues that arose in 2012 and that were, sort of late-breaking issues and looked at how they were resolved and, what was good about the resolution, what was bad about the resolution, and could we somehow characterize these issues as either policy or implementation. And I feel as though, it really isn't clear the distinction that you're trying to make, because I think we get into the same problems even though we use the word execution, that still, whether you view it as execution or not as execution, depends on which side of the controversial issue that you fall into. So, we spent so much time studying all the case studies of quote-unquote, implementation or was it policy, and determined that that is not a useful distinction. And that's why we came up with all of the remedies that we came up with that essentially say, well, hey, IRT has to determine whether they think it's policy or implementation. And I'm afraid we fall into the same trap here of, well, who really should make the determination of whether it's execution or implementation? And the language of the predictability framework is very troubling for me, because it says that staff will, quote unquote, collaborate with the community. We don't really know what that means, how it moves decision making forward, what the actual procedure is, because collaborate with the community is not a definition. And some of the issues that you talked about as obviously examples of execution were things like, changes in the registry agreement. I'm really struggling to understand you know, when you bring up certain topics, why it's really clear to you that, you know, for example, name collision is an execution issue. That's a policy issue. I'm sorry. I'm going on and on. I'll shut up now.
Thanks, Anne. And so a couple things on that, Anne. I posted that in my own personal capacity as my own belief, but it's not as the chair, and it was thrown out there to just provide one potential side of that issue. I was not expecting everyone to agree with how I characterized some of those issues. It was really just to start a process of getting people talking about it. So the fact that you don't agree with the characterization is totally fine and probably right in a lot of cases. So it was just to really get the discussion started. But I do want to address something you had said and then also mix it with something Ruben said on the chat, which I think is also pretty helpful. So, Anne, in your comment, you talked about a standing panel, whether we still call that an IRT or whatever we call that. And Ruben says the type of issues you mentioned sound similar to the IANA Customer Standing Committee to me. Perhaps we could recommend something in that direction. The new GTLD applicant group and BRG both made interesting interactions with staff during the program itself on some of these issues. So I'm going to go to Cavus, but if people could give their thoughts on what Rubens has said, and whether we the reason I'm not using the term IRT is that in my mind, an IRT has a definitive beginning and an end once it handles all of the issues that it is supposed to address. So I've been using terms like standing committee or something else to help determine whether this is something that should go back to the GNSO or another mechanism of dealing with it. And I know Cavus has an issue with using terms as execution, which I will try to avoid, but I'm trying to come up with ways to make a distinction between different types of issues. So, Cavus, please.
Two comments. One, I see discussions in the chat, some people saying that this is a implementation issue, and the other says this is a policy issue. This is something that we have in ICANN working groups, many always discussions, people saying that, no, it is a policy. The other says, no, it is implementation. That is something we should really not to produce such confusion. The other, I think, as I suggested in the chat, if we can, we should avoid the use of execution, because it's subsidiary or close to the implementation. Let's remain with these two terms, policy and implementation of policy. Execution, I don't understand, and that may cause some difficulty in processing the situation. So if we can avoid that, it would be much better. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. It's always difficult when, because depending on how much you care about an issue or whether you believe it's policy or implementation, that's the way you're going to classify it. So I'm wondering, so Rubens now says, and I know Rubens may not be in an area where he could talk, so he's saying if a CSC doesn't have a say in preventing a matter to be discussed at IRT, then when don't have to discuss what is execution, then we don't have to discuss what's execution, what's implementation. Okay, sorry, Rubens, I got it. So what you're saying is if we set up a kind of new GTLD or GTLD standing panel that would assist staff or work with staff to determine whether this is an issue that needs to go back to an IRT or even to the GNSO, because it could be a purely policy issue, right? Is that something that we could try to work on? Is setting up some sort of standing committee to assist staff when issues arise to help determine whether it needs to go back to an IRT, needs to go back to the full GNSO because it's pure policy, or whether it is, I don't know what word to use because it's always got, people have issues, or whether it's really some form of execution, that perhaps going to some experts in that subject area may resolve the issue. Avery says, if we decide to use execution, we will obviously need to define it. I suggest we try to base our discrimination between the two based on the analysis done by the GNSO and published as a report. Cavus says, yes. Cavus, I'm assuming that's to Avery. Avery then says, and as Anne said, it determined that the two were never completely disentangled, though at the beginning of a project it was mostly policy and at the end it was mostly implementation. And Greg says, how would the standing committee differ from the IRT? And that's a good question, Greg. And I think, again, I see an IRT as a creation of something from the GNSO itself in order to resolve certain issues that are presented to it. It completes its work and then ends its work as an IRT. I don't think there is a concept of a standing IRT. The other thing is that potentially, if you were to set up a customer standing type committee, it may be comprised of other members of the community other than GNSO constituencies and volunteers. In other words, it could be, for example, perhaps there's a data protection person that's on the customer standing committee or whatever we want to call it. Or perhaps there's some other experts that could be permanent members of this standing committee that would provide a different type of assistance than out of the GNSO community. So then Ruben says, Greg, usually less members with roles representing different parties. In IANA, they are GTLD registries, non-registries, GNSO, CCTLDs, RIRs, protocols. Cavu says, Jeff, as he suggested, we need to give a hand to ICANN staff in those circumstances. Cavus, I agree with that notion, and actually staff has asked us or has told us on several occasions, even Trang has said in the comments that or in some of her interventions in previous calls, that staff was really left to handle these issues on their own, and at times they did want to consult with experts or other community members but didn't have a mechanism to do that. And they're looking for us to recommend a mechanism by which they could do that.
Greg has his hand up.
Okay, yes, sorry.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. I think turning this into, I'm very concerned about the turn of this conversation. As a member of the IANA cross-community working group, I was part of the group that created the customer standing committee, spent quite a bit of time on it, less than some but more than most. It was really created for a very specific reason that IANA is viewed as a real technical aspect of ICANN's overall remit, where the customers' concerns, those who deal directly with the IANA function, really have a kind of premium position in terms of how it operates, and that there, for that particular purpose, the idea of a customer-weighted group made sense. Backfilling that into the policy and implementation and post-implementation process, I think, is a bad idea. And I think it gets us away from multi-stakeholder governance and toward being a self-regulatory body. by which I mean those who are involved in the, you know, basically those who are the customers start to become the regulators of the organization, and those who are not the customers go do macrame or something, and I think that is antithetical to the process and counter to the overall direction things have been going in for quite some time. You know, clearly, leaving staff to their own devices, especially when they don't want to be, is also something we've been getting away from. But trying to keep it in the hands of the so-called customers, to me, seems like a troubling development. Hopefully, this is obviously, we're just talking about possibilities and hypotheticals and theories here at the moment about way things should go. An IRT, you know, tends to be a balanced organization. The CSC is, by definition, an imbalanced organization. We created one imbalanced organization for one particular case. I think the general case demands continuing with balanced organizations. If there are ways to make an ERT more nimble than an IRT, we can look into them. But I think this is heading down a road that we should reconsider and return from. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Steve has his hand raised, and then I'll jump in. Steve?
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve Chan from staff, and I just want to touch on the point that Trang just raised in the chat. And so we're looking at a couple components. One of the things that she just raised is the time component. I think that can probably get drawn out better in some form of graphic. So I think one of the takeaways we can take from this meeting is that distinction between the different phases of work can be illustrated with probably a relatively simple graphic that shows the policy development phase, which is where we are now, versus the consensus policy implementation framework elements, and then the things that we're trying to distinguish now, which could be that word that Jeff's trying not to use, execution, or what the other word trying to use, operation phase. So I think hopefully some of this confusion can be alleviated with a relatively simple graphic that staff can develop a draft of after this call. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I think a graphic would be really good, and so we'll have that up definitely for the next. Well, I think we should send that around and then get some discussion on email if we could. I would hate to have to wait until the next call to get some good discussion, because I think we've had some good discussion. Greg, if I could turn a question on to you then. In the email I sent a few weeks ago, I used an example of what if ICANN wants to, and they actually did this, change the criteria used for pre-delegation testing. Sorry, not the criteria. Change the actual mechanism by which they tested, which had an impact on pre-delegation testing. So, for example, I think midway through, they had already done a bunch of PDTs, pre-delegation testing, and on IDNs, internationalized domain names, using a specific set of language, or without using a specific set of language tables. And then midway through, it decided that a better way to do that would be by the use of certain language tables. Again, still achieving the same policy, still achieving and measuring the same criteria used by the GNSO, but changing the way in which they themselves had total discretion over deciding the initial testing, but they just wanted to change it. Something like that could be very technical, but could disproportionately impact, obviously, those that are seeking to be delegated. It may, and in this case, had no impact on the policy, really didn't have an impact on implementation of the policy, because implementation was you need to devise a reliable testing mechanism in order to ensure that the registry meets those criteria, but really involved an operational issue. So to turn that back around to you, Greg, would it be your recommendation that that would still have to go back to a GNSO IRT as the only way to handle that issue?
This is Greg Shatton. I guess one question I have is, how was the original post-delegation testing protocol developed, and did the IRT participate in it at that time if there was an IRT, or would it have if there wasn't one? Because if they participated in it the first time around, it should go back to them the second time. And if the effect is one that creates a kind of difference in implementation, and that has enough, then I think, as opposed to it just being kind of some kind of a wash, then you, I think it goes back to an IRT. There's obviously some judgment about whether something is mere execution, but I think, in a sense, the answer is it's kind of mere execution or merely operational when nobody gives a shit. And if somebody cares about the difference between one and the other and feels that it has, you know, creates a different outcome, then I think at the very least what you have is an implementation issue at that point. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. The one part of that I want to kind of question and then see if there's any other input. You said it's merely execution if no one gives a, and I'm not going to repeat the language, if no one cares. But I would turn back to you and say, but applicants cared because they, and back-end registry service providers cared because they designed their system in order to meet a certain set of requirements that the PDT provider came out with initially. You know, it designed its system. So, you know, maybe, you know, the intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, the non-commercial stakeholder group, the ALAC, maybe those groups don't care because
maybe
it doesn't involve policy, but I could tell you that applicants do care and did care a lot when those changes, and that's what I'm trying to address, is that, and I'll assume for your example, because you threw it back to me, no, the IRT did not have, let's say, the IRT did not determine the exact testing procedures that would be used. That was something that was in the guidebook, determined by ICANN staff, or even it wasn't in the guidebook, it was released as subsequent notes. Actually, it wasn't in the guidebook. It was released as subsequent notes by the testing provider. I'll go back to you, Greg. I know we're kind of long on this subject, but as Ruben says, the applicants cared, the registries cared, the registry service providers cared, the rest of the community, maybe not so much. But that's what I'm looking for as a way to resolve those issues. Back to Greg, I think your hand's back up, and then Aubrey.
And just briefly, I think if you met my test because people cared. But the whole point of multi-stakeholder governance is not only to put the governance in the hands of only the people who kind of are closest to the issue and who care about it, you know, for business purposes. If that's all this was, then this would be a different type of organization. And the whole point of policy development, obviously the applicants care about more than anybody else, in a sense, about the whole process, both the policy and the implementation and the execution and the operation and the whole thing. That's not the test. I think problems arise when only those who are kind of have a vested interest in the outcome run the decision-making process for that outcome. And I think the essence of multi-stakeholder governance in its fullest iteration is to make sure that that doesn't happen. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Greg. So your view, if I could just summarize, would be if anyone cares about an issue, then it should automatically go back to a GNSO IRT, or if IRT is not the model, because an IRT usually has a concrete beginning, middle, and end, Maybe it's an IRT-like standing committee or something that basically goes back to an IRT if anyone cares about an issue. I'll go to Avery.
Thank you. Avery speaking. I wanted to one of the things that Greg said was there an IRT at the time of the AGB? And I think Greg was also in the group that created the notion of IRT, and very much the whole process that created the IRT and the new mechanisms within the GNSO came as a result of many of the issues that had been seen with the implementation and operationalization of policy in that. I guess I wonder indeed whether an IRT has a specific end or whether the end of the first application period is indeed a sufficient determinative end for it. I don't think it was that specific in its definition of the time limit on an IRT. So I think we do need to go back to that documentation and see what was assumed. But I think that a longstanding IRT may not be incompatible with the guidelines, but we should confirm that. I did have one question going back to this document. And that's sort of a question I wanted to ask, and we've seen a certain amount of wordsmithing in the chat as we've been talking on whether it's okay to start accepting some of these recommended changes here, though then, of course, they can be changed further. But the document, we're starting to get a little heavy in the changes, and it would be nice, I think, to take it to a clean copy and then start working further on more of the wordsmithing. And at this point, we have 6 minutes left.
Yeah, thanks, Avery. At this point, I'm still just looking at the chat to see there's a kind of a philosophical discussion going on the chat. On, you know, what is multi-stakeholderism and what does it actually mean? That's probably not a subject that all of us will ever completely agree on, but there certainly are some people that strongly view that any issues that arise should always go back to an IRT. And let's see. Kavu says, I have difficulties of the multi-stakeholder model being involved in the implementation process. Trang says, and then I'll go to Kavu, who has his hand raised, but Trang says, the discussion around taking things back to IRTs imply that implementation needs to be changed or modified, when in fact I think of the example about PDT testing specifications as operational evolution. From that perspective, I like Jeff's suggestion of a standing panel. Maxim says, ICANN staff implements, and they do not allow us to interfere directly. I'm going to go to Kavus. I know there's some more comments, but Kavus, you have your hand raised.
Yes. I think I have implemented some difficulty with the idea that we mix up these two situations. There are separations of responsibilities. Policy is some sort of legislative, and implementation is a source of execution. Multi-stakeholder should not be involved in implementation because it's difficult to be involved. How is it involved? If it is involved, it goes back to the policy. Yes, I have no problem. If the policy is not implementable, then it goes back to multi-stakeholder. But the multi-stakeholder put his hand in the implementation, where it's just a mixture of the responsibilities. I don't think that we should put this legislative part relatively with the executive entity together. So I have some disagreement with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I think so it seems, at least with the people that have spoken up, there are certain people that there are some people that believe that there are certain functions that do not necessarily have to involve the full multi-stakeholder IRT. Others believe that, no, everything should involve the full IRT. It's one of the action items we're going to do is to come up with a graphic that hopefully may make the distinction a little bit clearer, so recognizing that there will always be a gray line. And hopefully if we created a default position, if we did have this type of committee, standing panel, standing IRT, whatever we call it, that we could entrust them to help us determine which side the issue lies on and how to be resolved, rather than going back as a default to the IRT, to an IRT for everything. As Trang has said, ICANN staff is looking for certain feedback on certain issues that may not justify going back to a full IRT. This delegation testing may be one of those examples. Again, it's going to be hard to delineate a line, but I'd rather try to delineate a line and provide a predictable process as to how we do that than to not address it at all. So I know we have 2 minutes left. I'm going to turn it back to Avery for any other business. I think this call has been good, but I definitely want to take this to the mailing list to see if we can get some more comments. So thank you, everyone. Avery, back to you.
Thank you, Jeff. And, yes, that's what I was also going to recommend, is that this very good conversation be continued on the list. At this point, I'd like to ask if there is any other business that has occurred to anyone during the meeting that they would like to bring up in this last minute. I see no one's hand but my own, and therefore I thank you all for your time for this meeting, and hope to see you all discussing these issues on the list in the coming hours, days, and weeks. Thanks a lot. Meeting is adjourned.